Kia ora and welcome to the See Tomorrow First podcast. I'm Courtney Peters, Group Marketing Manager for NZ Tech. See Tomorrow First is a shared industry and government initiative created by your industry body, NZ Tech, alongside NZTE and NZ Story, to shine a spotlight on New Zealand's world-class and in many cases world-leading tech companies and share their stories with the world. I'm excited to be joined today by our guest, David Leach. David is the CEO of award-winning, fully integrated, cloud-based inventory management software, Sin7. Sin7 helps businesses by visualizing data, tracking events, and automating the critical steps that keep inventory flowing. Around $50 billion of value passes through the Sin7 platform every year. Its global success is a big reason why Sin7 won Company of the Year at the 2023 High Tech Awards. David has built an impressive career and reputation in fast-growing global software companies, holding executive leadership roles at EasyVet, Orion Health, and Curious. Today, we're going to talk about how Sin7 has scaled globally and contributed to making the tech sector one of New Zealand's largest export earners. We also dive into the challenges and triumphs of scaling a global SaaS company from New Zealand, and I'm sure learn quite a bit from David and Sin7's journey that will help the next gen of New Zealand tech companies to scale globally, as well as to attract investment and talent. Tēnā koe, David. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Courtney.
Okay, so Sin7 is set to become the world's number one inventory management brand. I'd love you to talk us through the company's origins and where and how it started, if we can start from there.
Sin7 started on Valentine's Day, actually, 12 years ago.
How romantic.
Here in Auckland. And initially, e-commerce-focused business, New Zealand customers only, very custom solutions, custom websites, to sell products online. And that developed a pattern, solving inventory problems to sell those products, like product descriptions, product photos, things like that. So that actually led to some partnership with Xero in Xero's really early days, and starting more officially an inventory management product that was sold as an add-on to Xero and expanded from there.
Amazing. So can you talk us through connected inventory processing? Because it's a bit of a mouthful, and also how this is enabling your customers globally to work smarter.
I'll try to describe it simply. Sin7 stands for connected inventory, but inventory really means physical products. We have thousands of customers, small and medium size businesses, and we help them sell their inventory essentially. So we do that by centrally tracking the inventory, availability of stock, location of stock, and we help them scale safely so that when they sell that stock 24/7 over lots of sales channels, lots of countries, that stock is going to be there and they can fulfill the order and protect the customer experience and avoid those really nasty situations where you've sold something and have to let the customer know, I'm sorry, Mr. Customer, that product you just bought yesterday, we don't actually have it in stock. So that's the sort of thing that we solve for. We do a lot more than that, but that's sort of the simple version. Really efficiently, our customers can add more SKUs, add more sales channels, expand into new countries, new markets, all on this central platform. Yeah.
And you joined kind of in late 2019, I think.
I did.
Is it just before, like, you've really started to scale globally? How did you end up here?
I call it a game of two halves. So the second half was around that 2019. I joined at the exact same time that a private equity firm acquired Sin7, a US-based PE firm. Mm-hmm. And the partnership that we've had with them has provided a lot of capital for us and a lot of expertise. And it's been a pleasure to lead the company through that whole period, a little over 4 years so far.
So how did you approach that kind of global scale when you first hit the ground running with Sin7?
I think I drew on some skills that I've developed over the years. I've worked in a number of global companies, those companies you mentioned earlier. And I think with the expertise and capital, this partnership with the PE firm, we went on a journey to, in particular, invest in the US market in expertise. So today, my leadership team split between New Zealand and US, and we've hired people that have done this before, hired people that have experience in the US, but experience globally, and just have that familiarity with the time zone challenges and flexibility in their day to sort of work with New Zealand and the UK and our other offices around the world. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard you talk before, and we're kind of diving into this now, but about the headwinds and tailwinds that come with being a global company from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Let's start with the kind of headwinds, the challenges that you face. Can you talk us through the biggest challenges with the US
particularly? Absolutely. The first headwind that comes to mind is, and someone mentioned this to me yesterday, is New Zealand's in the bottom corner of the world. It's also, I just came back from India last night. 1.5 billion people live in India. And I was telling this Uber driver that we have 5 million in New Zealand. And it's crazy, like completely different population size. And in this bottom corner of the world, so you're already at a disadvantage. And that's what I where I use this headwinds language. What's the things that makes it hard that works against a business that's trying to grow and go global? And I think it's the location, it's the time zone differences. It's takes a long time to travel to India, it turns out, and other countries.
Yeah.
And that costs money as well. And it's taxing on people's lives if you're a founder or, you know, a CEO. So there's some of the headwinds. I think some other headwinds, therefore, is how do you build trust? How do you win deals? How do you grow a market presence and compete and win against some big global players when you're in this bottom corner of the world? These are the headwinds I think that businesses have to overcome, I think, if they want to go global.
So how did you overcome, let's start with the time zone and location for Sin7?
Okay, game of two halves. First half, before the PE acquisition, everyone was based here in Auckland, New Zealand, servicing a couple of thousand customers in 25 countries. And we did it with a lot of people on shift work. And so that was a method that worked. It scaled us to a point. It was more cost effective. And we found people that were willing to do that. And this meant that we were a little easier to work with, designing it for a 24/7 world where we have to show up in the customer's time zone, but not in person. We just did it with Zoom. So we designed the business around, this is before COVID, around a remote first kind of customer relationship, heavy use of Zoom and other technologies to scale. So that's the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Second half, we've expanded with staff in market. We've also invested in a lot of partners. Spoke about Xero being a partner of ours in the early days, and we have a number of others, but we have services partners as well, and that's given us boots on the ground in places like the UK, South Africa, US, Australia, and so on. And that they're like an extension of our workforce. They talk about us, they sell us in when we're not in the room, and so that's given us scale as well. Yeah.
And how do you get consistent language when you're working with so many different partners and the way that Sin7 is coming across? Mm. How they talk about you? How do you manage that?
The analogy I would use is, how do you go about finding new customers, training them, signing them up, training them on your software and going live? Do the same thing with partners. So what is your ideal partner profile? How do you go about recruiting, finding the new partner, recruiting them, signing up that new partner and systematizing all of this? And then enabling that partner, giving them training, giving them access to online training, giving them access to our experts. And then when they go live, essentially we support them on their first few deals, first few projects. We incentivize them to stay a partner, and we give them ongoing training as things sort of change and evolve. So that's what we do now to keep that successful and scaling. Mm.
Makes sense. Okay, so now to the second headwind, which was competing. How do you compete internationally when you're coming from such a small space? How have you approached that?
I think I want to mention this see tomorrow first. So if Kiwi companies tend to see tomorrow first, meaning they're innovative and born global from day one. And I think this is how we can compete and win against larger players. And so with some courage and bravery, you can build products that are different. And I think that's the key point. If you try to build a product that's more of the same and go head to head, you're more likely to lose, I think. You're better off developing a software product or technology product that is actually different and targets a different type of customer. There's a few other like tricks and nuances. So if you want to go global, I would suggest you keep it narrow at first and you master one segment of the market. One type of product, even if you have ambition to have more products or a wider set of capabilities that has a wider TAM, total addressable market. I think, more progress with a narrow focus, narrow ICP is a much better approach. And then off the back of that success, then you can start to strategically expand your offering.
Mm. In the talk I saw you do the other day, you were mentioning that during COVID you actually made some acquisitions, a couple of acquisitions that helped your company to grow. And I found it really interesting hearing you talk about how you started to integrate those into Sense7 as a whole. Can you talk a little about that?
Yes. So we did two acquisitions in the middle of the pandemic, February 21, entirely over Zoom. The first time I met the founders of these two acquisitions was literally 18 months later. So it was hard. Like looking back on it, it was amazing that we pulled it off. So the way we approached it worked out rather well. We're fortunate that both our business and the two that we acquired were growing and quite successful. So we decided to prioritize that growth. And sometimes with acquisitions, you'll look for cost optimization like kind of quickly. This was not the strategy for us. And I think it paid off for us. So we kept it for a period of time, more of a portfolio looking business, where we ran the three business lines and it rolled up only at the senior leadership level is where the reporting lines kind of rolled up. Mm-hmm. But where we've gone on a journey and on a safe time horizon, sort of thoughtfully and slowly, we've deeply integrated the business now. And I think it's worked out rather well. So sort of through lots of leadership layers now, we have people that lead across both products. And we have a very tightly integrated sort of sales and marketing machine, onboarding functions, support functions, and so on, finance functions. We themed that one company inside and out. I think the other thing we did well in the first few weeks and months was communication. Like we doubled down on it. I've been here 4 years, and for 3 years of the four, we did a company-wide all hands every 2 weeks. It was a lot. We've slowed that down the last 12 months to be monthly because we're a little larger now, but we still focus on it. We put a lot of prep into it, so high quality presentation and just a lot of transparency, visibility for our team. It's a comms platform to take the staff on a journey. Mm. And I think it helped to just unite everyone and build the culture. And today, culture is one of our biggest strengths here at Sense7. We had these company values before the two acquisitions. And within 2 or 3 weeks of closing the two acquisitions, we actually did some work with the leaders of those two acquisitions on refreshing our values. And I think that led to a bit of symbolism. We adopted one or two of the values that they had, but actually there's a lot of commonality in the values that they already had. So we then made a big effort to roll out this refreshed values, which is today SPICY values. And stands for strive, passionate, innovate, collaborate, and integrity. And like we really mean it. We live the values with sort of, and it's worked out rather well. And I think it has helped to drive the culture. Mm.
How do you do a global all hands when you've got all those different time zones?
Well, I think in the early days, we built muscle around tools like Zoom and Slack. And we are a tech company, so we have people that are rather tech savvy. So it's not hard to adopt these technologies for us. And that's how we do it. So what we do is we run two live sessions. The morning session's around 10 a.m. normally, and that covers New Zealand and US. And then we run an afternoon session around 4:30, and that covers the rest of the world. And it works quite well. We decided two live sessions instead of recordings, just so people could hear it properly and have some live Q&A and things like that. So, yeah.
Such a fascinating approach. Shall we move on to the tailwinds now? Can
yeah,
you tell me
that
about
sounds
the tailwinds,
cool.
The tailwinds that you face as you grow globally?
Well, let's talk about New Zealand first. So I think New Zealand is a trusted country. What I find always comes up is sport, whether it's rugby, cricket, but generally sport. And it's also tourism. It's a place that is on the bucket list for a lot of people. So that's a good conversation starter. So that's a strong starting point. There's also trust that if you spend money with a Kiwi company, you're going to get what you paid for. So they're sort of fundamentals, but it is valuable and important, I think. I think some other tailwinds is some of the expertise that we have available to us in the local market. Because of that comment I made earlier, Kiwi companies tend to be born global from day one. I find in the tech industry here, if you look around, there is a lot of talent here in New Zealand that has global experience. And so in the early days, before you can afford to hire people on the ground in the US or elsewhere, you can hire people here that have that global experience, people that are willing to jump on planes, fly around the world and help you grow the business. Some of the other tailwinds you sort of have to create for yourself. So you got to invest in it early. I'm big on this language, deliberate design. So deliberately design the business so that you're easy to work with. And this is to overcome the headwind that actually being in the bottom corner of the world, the perception might be that you might be easy to work with at sales stage, but once you've bought the product, what's the experience going to be like then? Are you going to still be easy to work with? If you're in the UK's, your business going to operate in my working hours or your working hours? There's sort of fundamentals you have to design the business around quite early, I think, to achieve global success. And it's doable. You just have to design the whole operation. And thematically, I think it's about being easy to work with. And that creates tailwinds. It means that the growth will come a little bit easier in later years if you nail that early. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And when you're talking to potential customers and market, how do you kind of convey that? Like, we're not just about the sales process.
I think you have to prove it. So there's a few things you could do. You could have partners, like the boots on the ground through partnerships, like I said. Tailwinds, like as a company like Xero grows, if you're a partner of a growing company, you're better together. You can grow together. So that's another tailwind. I think in one of the most important things in software, at least, is the 24/7 support that people are looking for. So you're buying the software, you train the software, but then you're sort of self-sufficient. But then it's when things inevitably go wrong every now and then, how easy is it to have access to you? So I think you need to be able to show at sales stage how that support operation works 24/7. And in addition to that, probably a few reference customers as well that can help you. So those early adopter customers that are your supporters, that could perhaps play a role in helping you with your marketing, helping you with taking reference calls from customers that are thinking of signing up. So, yeah.
So you've talked a bit about the culture of Sin7, and I was just thinking with reference to, you know, when things inevitably go wrong, what is your kind of company approach to things going wrong? How do you deal with it?
It's good. It actually speaks to our innovation value, I think. But as much as we can, we try not to sort of blame an individual. There's an agile approach to this of retrospectives. You sort of reflect what went well and what didn't go well, what went wrong. And then what's the learning? Like, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to change? One thing I think we do really well in our business is we go above and beyond all the time for our customers when things go wrong for a customer. And one of the development areas that I'd like to build muscle in and be world-class at, because I think it's going to help us in future years, is to do the extra step of asking those questions that I call CAPA, corrective and preventative action. So we might solve something for customer A, but what's the corrective action that's going to prevent that problem from happening again for all our other customers or future customers? And I think I'd really like to master that next year. It's one of the goals I've got for our business next year, is to actually build muscle in that area. And I think it's going to be really fantastic for our business and our customers.
I guess I wanted to switch the focus a little bit from Sin7 itself to New Zealand as a whole. Our listeners can probably hear that you're not actually from here. You're from Australia.
That's
so
right.
You probably have an interesting insight into Kiwi culture and the way we approach business. You know, New Zealand tech is our second largest export. It's growing pretty rapidly. What do you think our potential is for the world?
Yeah, my wife is a Kiwi from Blockhouse Bay here in Auckland. So I've been here a very long time, about 17 years so far. I think the tech industry will become New Zealand's largest industry because our technology is borderless and it's weightless. It's easier to scale globally. It takes less time, less effort. If you get it right in terms of a global product, something that's globally differentiating and solves problems that are global problems, then I think there is a formula for software companies, hardware companies, technology to scale globally. And I think it's easier than some of these other industries that New Zealand's in. So I think it's exciting. I think a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think if we can, there are like these smaller companies, there's a lot of tech companies in New Zealand. And if they can just fast track the learning, learn from people that have done it before, and that's also how to create a tailwind in your own business, is hire people that have done it before. Everything's so much easier. You get to that desired future state in half the time, or at least faster. And same can be true just by learning from industry, learning from people that are just a little bit further ahead. And yeah, there's little things we've done in Sin 7, like we just talked about our approach to communication and all hands and use of Zoom and things that could be interesting for some people listening. But you're going to learn different things from different people. But I do hope that more people can speak up and support the tech industry, because I think there's a lot of great products out there, but some end up subscale. They don't quite land the ingredients, you know, the recipe to achieve global success. But it's not impossible. It's very possible. Mm. Yeah.
Hi, people who have done it before is a great piece of advice. Just before you leave us, do you have any other kind of nuggets of advice to give to the next gen of tech leaders?
A belief, I think, because you just need to believe that you can win big globally. You don't need to be a Kiwi company trying to expand globally. You can have a mindset of being a global company from day one. And scale up globally and use modern technology and hire people that have done it before in combination with modern technology and processes that design the operation to be easy to work with globally. And yeah, these are some of the most important ingredients, I think, to be really globally successful. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's so helpful. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's it for this episode of the See Tomorrow First podcast. See Tomorrow First is all about making New Zealand tech world famous, and there are lots of ways for you to leverage the campaign to help scale your tech offshore. No matter where you're at on your tech journey, check out our huge range of tools and resources at seetomorrowfirst.nz. You can listen to this podcast plus other podcasts by visiting the See Tomorrow First website, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's been a pleasure to host you today. I'm Courtney Peters from NZ Tech. Ngā mihi nui.